Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with California's first partner, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Then a conversation with an inspiring advocate for foster care youth and homeless youth, David Ambrose. And finally, a conversation with Alex Padilla, California's U.S. Senator, about ways to protect vulnerable Californians working in the heat. But let's start with Jennifer Siebel Newsom, who, of course, is married to the governor of California, who has a real passion for the issue of mental health. As you're about to hear, for her, the issue is very personal. Here's our conversation, beginning with a speech that she gave in Greece.
In the absence of a United States national youth mental health strategy, California is breaking down barriers between health, education, and social services, and building a comprehensive system that meets the needs of all Californians ages 0 to 26.
California's first partner, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, recently traveled to the SNF Nostos conference in Greece to talk about California's approach to mental health and kids for a world stage. I'm Alex Michelson. Welcome to The Issue Is. Jennifer Siebel Newsom is back on our set for the very first time. Welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you in the house. let's talk about this very big issue of mental health, especially youth mental health. Mm. You started off your speech by telling, in a very brave way, a very personal story about your own family. And I think it helps a lot of people to hear it. Can you share some of that with us and what you learned from it and how it shaped your worldview?
So when I was almost seven, a few days before my seventh birthday, we lost my older sister, Stacy, in an accident. And I blamed myself for her death and didn't, you know, our family went to therapy maybe once. Back then, there were, you know, we didn't talk about mental health. We didn't talk about, there weren't all the programs and resources and support out there for families losing a child. And I struggled for years. I tried to be perfect, tried to be two daughters instead of one, channeled my perfectionism into school and sports to, again, make up for the loss of my older sister, but didn't understand the depths of the trauma that I had experienced, nor did my family. And fortunately, now we're talking about trauma. We're talking about trauma-informed care. We are recognizing that a majority of the population have been traumatized. All of us experienced some form of trauma as a result of the pandemic. And California is basically committed to revamping our entire youth behavioral mental health system so that we can meet kids where they're at. We can address prevention, early intervention, and crisis management.
Well, and let's talk about that. First, let's start with a stat, which is really very scary, and put this up on the screen. It shows that one in three teen girls have seriously considered suicide. And so let's talk more about the investment she talked about. Here are some of the stats on that. A $4.7 billion investment, which includes 25,000 behavioral health professionals, training for teachers for early warning signs, and scholarships for mental health workers. You talked about that there isn't really a national strategy on this, that the world can learn from what California is doing. What do you want the world to learn from what California is doing?
Well, first of all, I want to say the Surgeon General of the United States is a rock star. We are so lucky to have Vivek Murthy. So that we're just so blessed to have him in his leadership. He did, you know, clarify that youth mental health is the defining public health issue of our time. And so I'm just so grateful for his leadership. But we, as a result of not having had a national mental health strategy for decades, state government is having to, you know, create and design their own youth mental health strategies. And so California is really committed to building the plane as we fly it. And it's, again, committing to the fact that there can be no wrong door policy, that children need to receive the behavioral health services in school where they're at, regardless of their insurance policy. So it's a really dynamic, complex system with virtual hubs, with telehealth. One of the programs that we committed to and invested so much in that's reaching children right now was designed by Child Mind Institute in partnership with government to basically provide coping skills, how to deal with big emotions, breath work, all different mindfulness techniques in Spanish and English for not just students themselves, but administrators, teachers, and parents. So again, this is just like a holistic approach to redesigning a broken system.
Well, and you talk about the Surgeon General. He talked about this warning when it comes to social media and
yes.
the way that it impacts teens. I know that's something you're especially
yes.
passionate about. What do you think can be done on the statewide level when it comes to that?
So I think we need both statewide incentives, but really we need a national strategy to address the damage and downside of the addictive technologies. Social media's, as we know, is harming our teens. And I think parents were too trusting and naive. You know, my 13-year-old was showing me some of these filters that girls are slowly coming to realize make them not like themselves and think that they're not enough and think that they have to do something dramatic to be enough, to be liked. Again, contributing to the 60% of teen girls experiencing sadness and hopelessness. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to us that there's a rise in suicidal ideation and suicide on the part of girls. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. And as a mother of two girls and two boys, this is not the world I want to raise my kids in. My children do not have iPhones. I see young children at restaurants, you know, at a park with a device. Parents think it's a babysitter. And so we have to do our part to educate parents of the dangers, but tech companies have to do their part.
Do your kids have flip phones or?
No, they don't have any.
They don't have any, really?
One of my daughter has a watch.
Okay.
She does have an Apple Watch.
To alert you in an emergency or
yes.
something?
Yes. And yes.
Yeah.
She has an Apple Watch.
I also think it's important to like get rid of the stigma when it comes to therapy. Like I go to therapy.
God bless.
I found it to be so helpful.
Yes.
And I think it's important to talk about the fact that it's been helpful.
Yes.
I know we were out in Santa Monica where at Santa Monica High School, they offer free therapy to the kids as part of their program there,
yes.
which is really a national model too.
Mm.
Talk a little bit about that and how important that is.
So, goodness, I mean, we don't have enough workers in the healthcare system, especially in the mental health field. And so, again, through, as you mentioned earlier, all these training and incentive programs, we're trying to increase and augment that population. In addition to, I love one of the initiatives is 2,500 highly talented, culturally competent kids who are interested in careers in healthcare, really mentoring them and supporting them to give them that pathway. I'm like you. I'm a big proponent of, you know, mental health is physical health. We all have it,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are inextricably linked. And I would argue, and we were just at the governor's conference, and one of the governors shared that basically every issue, whether it's crime, education, mental health is a part of the problem, but it's also a part of the solution to addressing all the different issues that government touches. So that's why this $4.7 billion is such an important investment. The stigma piece is, interestingly, you know, I make documentaries, and I made my documentary on The Mask You Live In, which looks at the stigma and pressure that men feel. We've been socializing boys and men to disconnect their heads from their hearts and repress emotions. And that's why I think in some ways, the more we can do to invite boys and men into that feeling part of themselves. And in some ways, like a coach, right? One way in for kids is through like, oh, this is a sports coach. This is someone that's gonna help you. But no, I'm there with you. More people need it. It's such a gift if you can have access to it. And that's why telehealth and these virtual hubs are so important.
Well, it's interesting you say that because professional sports teams now often bring in people
yes.
to do just that because they realize the science is there
yes.
and helps with people's sports performance. Let's touch a little bit more on you as a mom. How
yes.
do you deal with these issues with your kids? You mentioned that they don't have iPhones, but how do you talk about these issues with your kids?
Yeah, I'm very honest, maybe too honest
yeah.
with them. Sometimes I'm like, why did I just tell him that? Because Hunter's like, you know, you have anxiety. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, like sometimes it's too much for them. Again, we all have mental health. You know, my family that I was born into, going back to my grandma, she had so much anxiety. She couldn't sit still. She was a nervous Nelly. And I realized my dad inherited that. And the way he sort of dealt with it is by constantly nagging and being on top of us. But it was a beautiful thing, meaning he had his own way of coping to deal with his own anxiety and stress. And so there is good anxiety, right? And I think, so not all anxiety is bad. And I think really what we're trying to do is educate people and normalize people around mental health and how to turn what they have into a positive, how to manage it. And again, we need that to live in today's day and age, which is challenged with technology, a 24/7, you know, infotainment culture, and also incredible wealth inequality.
Sure, so much of that. You know, this week, one of the big debates of the week was Barbenheimer. Do you pick Oppenheimer or do you pick Barbie? So we know which one you picked. We've got a picture of you taking your family to the Barbie movie.
Oh,
there are all the kids. What'd you think, and what did your kids think?
Well, you know what? I did want to see Oppenheimer. I really did. But I didn't know if Oppenheimer was appropriate for them.
Yeah.
The kids had a blast. Some of it went over their heads. But actually, I thought it was great. I love Greta. I think she's an incredible director. I'm so happy to see her there. I love the stars. I mean, they're fabulous actors. It was really creative, nuanced, smart, feminist, dynamic. You know, I think some men might, and young men in particular, might be like, what? but it's good for everyone. And I was proud of Mattel for...
How'd your boys react to it?
I think they were confused. I'm not sure they were so impressed with Ken.
Yeah.
No, but great acting and fun and, you know, inspiring. And I can't wait to see Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, female empowerment, Women's World Cup is happening now as well. We've got a photo of you as a young soccer player at Stanford, right? And that's your dad with you, right?
That was my dad.
Yeah.
He's my dad.
And so you recently honored soccer star Megan Rapinoe with a spot in the California Hall of Fame. We've got some video of this as well. We know that you're a big fan of her.
Yes.
Are you all watching the World Cup? And what are some of the lessons that we can learn from her and from those girls?
Megan,
women, I should say.
Yes, no, exactly. Megan's, you know, so bold and really uses her voice to speak up and out for equality and justice and equal opportunity. And like me, she cares so much about equal pay. And so I'm so happy to know that even if the U.S. women's team doesn't win, that they'll go home with the highest, financial benefits. They deserve it. It's been a long time in coming. And I just, you know, want to see more young women using their voice to stand up for, you know, justice and equality. We still don't have equal pay in this country. California has the strongest equal pay laws, but we're still trying to close that gap. It's worse for women of color. It's worse for mothers. It's worse for LGBTQ plus women. And as a result of the pay gap, there's a huge wealth gap for women.
Sure.
So that's one of the issues that I've been championing at the state level.
But in terms of the games on a fun level,
are
you cheering loud? You have watch parties? What's going on?
My daughter, all my kids play soccer, but my 10-year-old just had a tournament this weekend. And so it was like shuffling between her tournament and the watch party.
Yeah.
But it's really fun. You know, soccer's one of those sports, and there are other incredible sports for young girls, but that really builds team and camaraderie and gives girls, you know, hope and excitement for what's possible in their future.
Well, and then there's a California political connection to the World Cup as well. I don't know if you're cheering for the Attorney General's daughter, Rob Bonta, who is a great soccer player at Yale.
His
daughter, Reyna,
is
playing for Philippines. Yes, because of their Filipino heritage.
Yes.
So you're rooting for her, too?
Yeah. Yes. No, they're fabulous. I love that family.
Yeah, it's kind of wild, that whole connection to it
girls.
As well. Okay, I want to ask you about one other thing. When the governor was on our show last year, he mentioned that you gave him the greatest gift. Here's what he said.
My Father's Day gift, greatest gift ever. The best. I'm not even making this up. An outdoor pizza oven.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out I was buying frozen dough. No. Learn how to make your own dough. I'm the guy. It's a 4-hour hellish experience where you should just physically.
So you're literally there making fresh pizzas every Sunday?
It takes me 4 hours because each one has to be done. And one of the kids says, no, not that one.
So is that true? Is he really out there for 4 hours?
Yes, no, when he does something, he does it with complete attention and intention. I don't care how long it's going to take until he gets it done. He is one of those guys. I'm always like, honey, it's a lot quicker and simpler if we just go buy the dough. Nope, I'm making my own dough. It's better. He has a blast. No, it's fun. It's fun. It's a good outlet for him.
What's the best pizza he makes?
Oh, I love when he puts arugula on top in the end and a little of that truffle oil. It's really good.
Oh, well, that sounds good. It just on him and you... How do you deal with, from a mental health perspective, all the stuff that's said about him? Everybody that assumes he's running for president or says he's terrible or says he's great or all the rest. I mean, there's so much incoming about you, him, your family all the time. How do you deal with that?
Well, you have to ignore a lot of it. And someone once told me, a celebrity once told me, if you can't read the bad, then you really shouldn't read the good either. And so just know who you are. I think that's really important. I mean, they've said crazy things about us, even, you know, crazy things about, like, where we live, you know, crazy, crazy, crazy. And I've wanted to contest it, but I just sort of keep my mouth shut and I just stay focused, because otherwise you lose all your energy and your time, and it's, you know, an emotional sink. And so I just try to stay focused and keep doing good work and hoping that we're inspiring people and that we're making people's lives better. And that's what we have to do. And then again, challenging people to not spread hate online and challenging tech companies to take more responsibility for the culture that they've been creating or that they've been allowing.
Well, we're going to end with something fun.
Okay.
This is a 30-second game to get to know your personal favorites.
Okay.
Last time we did this, we learned that the Brady Bunch was your favorite show.
Okay.
So now we're going to learn some more of your favorites. So here we go.
Okay.
We're going to start off with, what is your all-time favorite book?
Ooh. Cast.
Okay. Who is your favorite sports team?
The Kings right now.
Yeah, there we go. Sacramento Kings.
Sacramento Kings.
Light the beam. Who's your favorite athlete?
I've always loved LeBron James.
LeBron James, who we're praying for him and his family this week. Favorite Republican?
And Steph Curry, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, all the Californians.
Who's your favorite?
And Darren Fox.
Who's your favorite Republican?
Oh, my dad.
There we go. And best thing about being a Californian?
The weather, the geography, the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the governor told us last time your dad liked watching him on Hannity, right?
My dad was proud of him. My mom was proud of him. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for sharing this important message.
I think
it's really important we talk about mental health.
Yes.
And so we're grateful that you're leading that conversation.
Our thanks to Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Now to a guy named David Ambrose, who I have been so inspired by. We first did a segment with him on Fox 11 Los Angeles. I read his book. I was moved by it. I've gone to lunch with him a couple times and thought we need to give a bigger platform to this issue of foster care. So here is our conversation with him, beginning with what he just did this week.
This week, David Ambrose delivered a TEDx talk at Wrigley Field in Chicago, discussing his remarkable story of overcoming childhood homelessness and foster care abuse. He writes about all of it in his memoir titled A Place Called Home, which is out now. David Ambrose, welcome to The Issue Is for the
very
first time.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations on the book. I think it's really, really excellent and is something that everybody should read, because it gives you a sense of an issue that we don't talk about enough, which is foster care.
Yeah.
We want to put up some stats on the screen of foster care. Foster care is the largest single source of homelessness. After aging out of the system, nearly 60% of young men will be convicted of a crime. More than half of America's homeless population spent time in foster care. Foster youth are more likely to die, end up in jail, be pregnant, or be sex trafficked than ever attend college. Here is a photo of a young David Ambrose. Can you tell us your story, for people that haven't read the book, of what you went through when it comes to homelessness and foster care?
So I shared in my memoir the story of my family, which is truly the story of too many children. There's 8.4 million children that share something very similar. We started homeless. I was born into homelessness. There was not a before time. It was my normal. I had a brother, a sister, and my mom. My mom had a progressively worse mental health issue. And if there's an issue beyond poverty that I would like to focus on, it's mental health care, because they're so intrinsically tied. We grew up for 12 years in the streets of New York City for the most part. We begged, we borrowed, we slept in the street. Until around 12, we entered foster care. And when I first entered foster care, I was convinced I was saved, and I learned very quickly that hell had a basement, and I was going to go into it for a period of time. I struggled through foster care, barely made it out with one good foster family out of all of them, and I ended up going to Vassar College and UCLA School of Law.
Yeah, and you experienced some abuse in the foster care system as well, which is also common, and not really a great outlet to go to anybody to get you out of that abuse, which was also really striking. But you mentioned your education. We want to put a picture up of your siblings as well, because all of you are now thriving. Your mom, despite the mental illness, talked a lot about the importance of education and wanting you all to succeed. And all three of you now have advanced degrees, your sister with a degree in social work. You mentioned your experience at Vassar, your law degree at UCLA. You have worked in local politics, including serving as the president of the LA City Planning Commission. There you are at City Hall. And you've had some pretty big corporate gigs as well for some of the biggest companies in the world. You're currently serving as head of community engagement for Amazon. You previously worked, you see you there, in terms of corporate responsibility for Walt Disney Television. And in the process of all of that, you've gotten to meet some of the biggest politicians in the world, like Hillary Clinton and Karen Bass, so many others. What has been your message to them about this issue of foster care?
In our country, with 8.4 million children, not since 1999 has the phrase child poverty been uttered at a presidential debate. 8.4 million children. It's larger than the population of some states, and we ignore it. We flow around the issue as if it didn't exist. My message is consistently that economically it doesn't make sense, and morally we can do better. This is not who we are. And when I speak to these individuals, folks like Secretary Clinton or Mayor Bass, they are right there with us. But what's lacking is public interest in this issue. It seems overwhelming, and so we feel helpless to address it. And therefore, our elected people don't feel necessarily the motivation of the public to fix it.
Because so often, the way things get done in politics, let's face it, is lobbyists, right? Corporations like Amazon or Disney or other big companies have people that go in and argue for certain policies, and they give campaign donations, and that's how things get done. But if you're in foster care, you barely have money to survive and eat. You don't have money to go be a lobbyist in Sacramento or in Washington. And so a lot of these kids are often voiceless, except for people like you. But we have made some progress in this state, including in a big way when it comes to college and foster care. We know Governor Newsom believes in this issue. He had foster siblings growing up. What is going on when it comes to college in California?
Lots of good things. So California, Governor Newsom just signed legislation that passed, which will provide free tuition, room, and board for foster youth at Cal State, UC, and the community colleges. It has been years of the making, and we have some amazing legislators with lived experience, as well as our governor. And so the law passed. It's groundbreaking in the country, and I think will have a huge impact in outcomes for kids like me coming through foster care.
But another big issue is, like, where do they stay? Because we've talked about so many of the foster youth that end up homeless. You're working on an initiative with this when it comes to getting a dorm for foster youth. How's that work?
If a third of the homeless in LA County and in the coastal counties are former foster youth, what is the master plan we have developed to address a third of the population? The answer is none. Well, what I propose is something different. What if we built a dorm at a number of community colleges across the state? We own the land. These are our children. You don't have to build parking, and you can achieve scale. So there's so many pluses. And then also you emancipate young people to pursue a vocational two-year or transfer. We have a plethora of lawyers. We have a dearth of people in vocational trades. I think this helps on all fronts with the workforce crisis we have. So we could do so many goods and also be live up to who we are as a people.
So what's the answer? People saying yes? Seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, you know, everyone says yes. The challenge I find is we need to do it. So a couple things are in motion. One, very proud we are working to build a dorm in Los Angeles at one of the community colleges here, LA City College. The idea would be to build it right on campus, right above the Red Line subway station, so that people have access to this amazing institution.
You know, it's been interesting that you are now paying it forward through your experience. You've got a foster son. We've got a picture of him as well, and I know you're so proud of him and his success and the lessons that you've taught him. I know you've learned a lot from him. You've also been on tour across the whole country, talking to a lot of churches about this issue, which is interesting, where you're also talking about your own experience as an openly gay man as well. What have you learned both from your son and from all these people you're meeting across the country when it comes to these issues?
My foster son taught me my most important lesson, which is to be vulnerable. My foster son taught me that in order for him to live and process what he went through, that I had to share my experience. And before that, I hadn't really done that. And that vulnerability has helped me become a more full person, able to contribute with my memoir and share my story. Across the country, I've talked to conservative, liberal, all of it. My goal is to make sure that everyone knows that we have a stake in the lives of 8.4 million children. 700,000 foster children pass through the system each year. They're not red children, they're not blue children. They're America's children. And so I will talk and be in conversation with anyone that will listen. That's Saddleback Church up there on the screen. We should be talking to everybody about this issue because these are our children.
Yeah, and the most vulnerable children that we have. And if you want to solve homelessness, you got to solve foster care. And if that's our biggest issue, we should be talking more about this.
Yeah.
We're so grateful for the work that you're doing in this city of angels. You are one of the angels of this city, and you're an inspiration to me. I think this book is so fantastic. I think people should look at it.
Finally, our story with Senator Alex Padilla of California, which begins by talking about a farm worker from California. With temperatures soaring, lawmakers are learning about a California farm worker named Asuncion Valdivia. He was only 53 years old when he died of heat stroke after picking grapes for 10 straight hours in 105 degree temperatures.
Let's not let Asuncion Valdivia's death be in vain.
California Senator Alex Padilla talking to us exclusively about his new legislation called the Asuncion Valdivia Heat Illness Injury and Fatality Prevention Act. That legislation would direct OSHA to regulate paid breaks in cooled spaces, access to water, limitations on heat exposure, and increased training and regulations on heat-related issues.
What's the argument against this?
A lot of pretexts, a lot of excuses about, you know, being bad for business. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Last year, Padilla became the first U.S. senator to work alongside farm workers in the field. But this affects far more than just farm workers. There are an estimated 20,000 heat-related illnesses in California every year.
Bottom line is workers deserve better.
If Congress doesn't pass this, Senator Padilla hopes President Biden will enact reforms on his own.
The time to act is now.
Our thanks to Senator Padilla, to David Ambrose, to Jennifer Siebel Newsom, and to you for listening. Next week, a special edition of The Issue Is focused on athletes using their platforms for good. We'll be talking with Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers and Juju Smith-Schuster of the New England Patriots. We'll see you then for that. In the meantime, like us, subscribe, let us know what you think, share it out, and we'll see you next time for more of The Issue Is.